everybody. We are getting underway. Oh, we're waiting to call and see if somebody's calling in.
We're okay.
We're good?
Yep, okay. We're good. And we're fine with quorum, so we can continue on without, yes.
So okay, so we'll get underway. Thank you, everybody, for coming today. We are going to review the February 22nd and March 8th meeting minutes. Has everybody had an opportunity to read those? Thank you. Does anybody have any changes or any concerns? Okay, not hearing any. Let's start with the February 22nd specifically, the February 22nd, 2019 meeting minutes. If nobody has any concerns, do we have a motion?
Sure. I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, those are passed. And then we'll move on to the meeting minutes for March 8th, 2019. Is there a motion?
I move. We accept the minutes.
I second.
And seconded. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, those are carried. Department updates.
Let's see, we're on the administrative rulemaking calendar. I have no updates.
Okay. 2019 legislative review.
Let's see, general legislation update. That would be me. Okay, so going quickly, let's see. So in regards to where we are at with our bill review of what's in front of us, so going down the list of where we're at with bills that have been recommended by the committee, House Bill 2087, which is the Workers' Compensation Division's civil penalties cap bill, that was passed in the Senate earlier this week, and it's heading to the governor's desk. House Bill 2406, same thing. It was also voted out by the Senate on the same day. Let's see, and then in regards to others, I'm looking down the list here. House Bill 2788, this is MLAC's bill in regards to increasing the statutory floor for the Worker Benefit Fund. That is still in subcommittee and in Ways and Means. It's waiting to be assigned to an actual subcommittee and for a hearing there. And House Bill 3003, which is SAFE's bill in regards to self-insured employer security deposits or surety bonds. That one is scheduled in House Business and Labor for next Wednesday, the 27th, for public hearing, possible work session. We also, two members, as you know, have our two subcommittees, one on House Bill 3022. From the Oregon Trial Association, we have our next subcommittee this afternoon. We had our first subcommittee this morning for House Bills 2418 and Senate Bill 507 with PTSD, in which we have our next subcommittee meeting scheduled for next Friday morning on that. So I think that's it. Make sure there's a page two. Make sure I'm not missing anything. Oh, yes. Last but not least, House Bill 3146. This one was recommended by the committee at our last meeting. This was the one that changed the terminology of inmate throughout various chapters of Oregon statute. That one is scheduled for a public hearing, possible work session in House Judiciary, I believe, next week as well. I don't have the specific dates, but that one is moving along as well.
Thank you. All right, we are going to move on to House Bill 2413, which is the vocational assistance changes. And Adele is here. Come on up, if you don't mind. Yes, please. Oh, Kathy Wallace. Yes. Thank you.
Chair People, and thank you to the committee for all the time that you spend doing this. It's well appreciated. I'm Adele Bostwick, and this is Kathy Wallace. And I think we're kind of the matriarchs of the Rough and Tumble World of Oregon Rehab. And I wanted to just share one instance of vocational assistance with you today to kind of give you more information about the kind of work that we do, and then really quick, I'll get right to the bill. I was working with a gentleman who was a 50-ish union lifetime carpenter.
Can you speak a little louder, please?
Pardon?
Speak a little louder, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
This is an example of a gentleman approximately 50 years old who was a union carpenter, lifelong union carpenter. And he was working on a high-rise project in downtown Portland. And out of the sky comes, way up in the sky, comes a 2x4 and lands on his head. Hits his hard hat, knocks him down, injured his shoulder, his cervical area, and he also has a closed head injury. Safe Corporation, as they often do wisely, referred him to us for what's called optional services, so we could keep him focused and positive as he went through his recovery and treatment modalities. We worked with a brain injury program, and the brain injury program is a full-time day treatment program, and academic improvement and computer skills were made a part of that program. At the end of the program, it was clear that he wasn't going to be a carpenter, so we worked with him to discover another vocational objective, and that vocational objective was property manager. We submitted a formal training plan, which consisted of another term of academic and computer skills, so he got really good knowledge of Word and Excel and PowerPoint. And then he also took classes in property management, where he, after that, gained his property manager license. When he gained his property manager license, we worked with him and we found an internship for him in a property management company. They immediately recognized his skills in construction, and during the year of his internship, he was a project manager for a high-rise condo while they remodeled and painted on the inside and the outside. And so he was in charge of bringing the project in on time and under budget. At the end of his internship, they hired him. I remember the salary. They hired him. $6,666.66 a month, and he's still there, and he called me about we followed him for 60 days like we do, and he called me recently and said that he was thriving, he felt productive, and he felt appreciated. So that's one of the examples of what we do.
Thank you, Adele. Hey, I'm wondering if you could take us through, I know you made some changes, and I'm wondering if maybe you'd walk us through what the differences are, and then we could have some discussion about those.
I will.
Great.
I will. The first change that we made, and I'm assuming you have the updated proposal.
We do, thanks.
Okay. The first change that's on there is that we are leaving the 80% test of employability to establish eligibility for vocational assistance. And that is on page 2, line 45. So we're not asking for 90% anymore. We've changed that. We've left it at the 80%.
Okay.
And then we're adding, if the worker's suitable wage is determined to be below minimum wage, the worker is also eligible for vocational assistance. And that change then would be on page 3, line 9.
Why don't we go through all of them, since there's only four. We can go through all of them, and then we can have some discussion.
One more, and then the rest are Kathy's going to address.
Perfect.
We're deleting on page 3, line 8, a provision that would have included employer-paid health benefits in the equation of the average weekly wage for determining vocational assistance. So we're taking that completely out.
And then next, we're going to the subject of paying time loss during the entire approved training program. We want to retain the requirement for insurers to pay time loss for training programs up to 21 months duration, page 4, lines 4 through 13. We want to amend page 4, beginning on line 4, to read 12. Notwithstanding ORS 656.268, if a worker is actively engaged in an approved training plan, the insurer or self-insured employer shall pay temporary disability compensation to a maximum of 20. Which is the max allowed.
Sure. Okay, does anybody on the committee have questions specifically for Adele?
I just want to clarify one thing. I think I'm pretty sure I understand it. Basically, you're deleting health paid employer health care benefits, so you're going just to raw wage.
Correct.
No benefits at all.
Correct.
Just want to make sure. Thank you.
Okay, my question is only on the second item, that where the suitable wage is determined to be below minimum wage. So any minimum wage person who's injured is automatically going to be looked at for 80% and get vocational assistance.
First of all, since we're keeping the 80%, what we have to look at is, does a person have the skills, knowledge, and abilities to earn then minimum wage at or higher, correctly? It depends on, however, if they're in the secondary range and they have no secondary work skills, they will be eligible.
Sorry, say that again. What?
If they're released to work in the secondary range.
Secondary
range is a lifting up to 10 pounds occasionally.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're still looking at their skills. I mean, maybe the person's a data entry person in a former job. So in that case, they wouldn't be eligible. But if it's below minimum wage, then we're saying yes, they should be eligible.
But anybody can earn. Anybody who can work earns a minimum wage. So anyone who can work in Oregon, if you get a job in Oregon, you're going to pay minimum wage. So isn't your suitable wage automatically minimum wage if it's not work?
Well, there's a lot of cases where if someone can't be on their feet,
yeah,
and they don't have any computer skills, and they're 56 and they haven't worked for 5 years. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios, not a lot, but there's scenarios where that person can't be a barista, they can't be a retail clerk.
They're unemployable. They're unemployable then. They're unemployable then? Is that what you're saying?
They could be.
They could be. Maybe they can only work part time.
That would be a minimum wage.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be full time minimum.
Okay, so the provision isn't like automatically just one criteria of their suitable wage is determined below minimum wage. They still have the other criteria that they have to have PPD, they have to have permanent restrictions preventing them from returning to their minimum wage job that they already had. Any other criteria besides the below minimum wage, besides those two?
It strikes me that there's a list you have to evaluate. Their skills, their transferable skills, their education, their work history, are there a reasonable number of jobs that would relate to the jobs they've had in the past? It would not be automatic.
So
because people have other skills.
Okay.
I mean, it kind of takes into account someone like a truck driver that's been a truck guy now. He's been a truck driver his whole life. He has a serious shoulder injury, and he would have. He's almost 50. He would have trouble finding. I mean, honestly, he's not going to be hired as a fast food worker. He's not going to be a barista. So in his case, you'd have to look at: is there something else he could do? Could he be a security guard? So you have to look at all the other things.
I guess the concern is just simply that if you have a minimum wage employee, maybe they work at McDonald's as a cook or something, and they are injured, that they wouldn't just automatically get, you know, a 2-year degree just because they were a minimum wage employee. So it's only if they can't return to that job because of permanent disability.
Yeah, and you just said something that I think is important. There's rules that cover your point that a McDonald's cook isn't going to be given a program with an associate's degree. The rules say that we help them get as close as possible to the wage and injury with vocational assistance. There's no obligation for the insurer or self-insured employer to help them get more than they were making an injury. So that would be a plan that should be denied if that was submitted.
So is the wording in the bill, I'm sorry, I only have this piece of paper. I don't have the actual revised bill. I don't know how I missed it, I'm sorry. So is the wording okay in the bill? It doesn't like automatically without all of the other criteria Are we good?
I haven't seen the verbiage either, so I was hoping.
Okay.
I think they're going to discuss the verbiage of the bill, and we're going to really say this is what we're thinking.
You've eased a lot of my concerns, but I want to make sure that the wording is real clear in the actual bill.
So you could have someone that was a cook, and if they're like 23 or 24, and they had computer classes in high school, and they had some other job before that that was an office helper, then they have transferable skills and could do something else. So you have to evaluate the employability.
So, my concern is that a minimum wage job is actually a job that you don't have training for. That's why it's a minimum wage job. You don't have to have learned how to do X, Y, or Z. A minimum wage job is a minimum wage job is a minimum wage job. You rarely do you come across a minimum wage job that requires pre-training. And if it is, where are you getting that from? I mean, it's not like you don't go to college to go get a minimum wage job. That's my concern is I'm not sure what the training, if they're at McDonald's and they're on their feet and they have to not be, then they look for a job that's sedentary, that is sitting, you know, at a reception desk answering phones or whatever that is. But those entry level positions at minimum wage don't require, by their very nature, they don't require training usually, so I'm not certain what's being gained.
Let me help you with that. Minimum wage jobs generally require some level of physical capacity. I think there are very few minimum wage jobs, like say if a worker is, the permanent restrictions are in the sedentary range, basically desk work is a good way to define it. I don't think that all minimum wage workers have skills, knowledge, and abilities to perform desk work. You know, maybe they've never turned on a computer. Maybe they've never answered the phone. We have to prove that they have abilities to do that. And does that answer your question?
Well, it doesn't, right? I mean, so if you're saying that minimum wage jobs all have physical requirements and they can't do the physical requirements, so now they're actually eligible to improve where they were at the time of injury. I don't think that that's the intent of workers' comp or the employer, what the employer's paying in on when they're paying their premiums. I don't think that's taken into consideration that you are intentionally now improving an employee's status. So I'm concerned about that.
Okay, let me give you an example. Say I have a gentleman who worked at a tree farm, and he was making minimum wage year round at the tree farm. And he was injured. He got hit with a tree. He has knee injuries and he has shoulder injuries, and so there is no minimum wage job that he can perform. He probably doesn't have a GED, and we see this all the time. This is not an extreme example. He doesn't have the skills, knowledge, and abilities to do sedentary work. So we have to offer him services to get up to get back to. His wage and injury, which in Portland would be $12 an hour.
But you're not putting him back to $12 an hour. You're in fact putting him now to $13 or $15 an hour.
Not necessarily. Maybe I can train him to be a security guard, which we do. Maybe we can train him to be a data entry clerk.
It might be a 3-month training.
It might be a 3-month
training. Computer skills and maybe a cooperative education, answering phones. You're going to have to have some skills to get a sit-down job.
Yeah. Just to follow up on that, so statutorily, currently, you're obligated to do the thing that gets him closest to the wage he was making beforehand. So if you tried to put in for something that, like the 2-year associate's degree, that's going to get rejected.
It should
absolutely
be.
Correct.
Okay. So the system as it functions now is not designed to allow a significant increase in the worker's status in life because of the mechanics of how focus assistance works.
Exactly, and let me tell you how I explain this to my clients. They come in thinking, well, I can get 16 months and sometimes I can get 21 months, and I say no. The way this works is, say if you wanted to be a widget maker, well, maybe it takes 60 days to learn to be a widget maker, if that was a suitable wage for you. Then that's what you would get, is 60 days. If your wage at the time of injury was higher, and it was appropriate to train you to be an internet administrator, then then getting 16 months would be much more reasonable. It depends on what the labor market commands. If the labor market commands a two months demonstration job, that's what you get. If you're a higher wage earner, then you're going to get more. But nothing is automatic.
You're not supposed to train them for something that gets them a higher wage than once they're eligible. If they're eligible, your job is to get them as close as possible to 100% of their wage. So if they made $12 at the time of injury, but they can't be on their feet, and they don't have computer skills, it's my experience that they're going to have a little something more to get a job.
I have some questions for the next person who wants to testify, because I want to understand how this system works a little bit better. But before I call Jenny up, I just want to check with Atusa. She's on the phone with us. Did you have any questions?
No. Thank you for apologize for getting here late. I think I appreciate Diane's clarification because I recognize the difference between needing, physical skills in some of the minimum wage jobs, and then some more technical skills are different. But I would also just add that the least out, and maybe this is just anecdotal, but I am seeing people who have training in things and have actually gotten an education and are still getting minimum wage jobs. And even with degrees, sometimes those jobs are not more than minimum wage. And some of them are oftentimes, bookkeeping and accounting, entry level, but most people did go to school and have certificates or even degrees and are not getting much more than minimum wage. Somebody would need some kind of training, for some of these things that are being posted and available. They're not being made available for jobs at more than minimum wage.
Okay. Thank you. Don't go far, because I think we'll have you come back up, but I'm wondering if maybe Jenny, or you might just stay there if you want, because that might be an exchange.
I have one other comment.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And you have to take into account that I think it's within a year and a half, the minimum wage in Portland will be $14.75 an hour. So then you're going to have people that making $17 an hour, that their suitable wage will be minimum wage, and these are people. And we have lots of these kind of people that they've spent their whole lives as a machinist, a welder, a roofer, and they incredibly do not, they can turn the computer on, they can do an email, and they can search the web, and that's it. And you'd think by now they would have computer skills, but they really are going to have something else.
So what you're saying is, say they're making $17 an hour, and 80% takes below minimum wage.
In a couple of years.
Yeah, certainly. You'd be finding them a boat program that would get them close to $17 an hour again. Okay, but not above $17 an hour.
No. They would never.
Close to their wage at the job of where they were.
Yeah, all you're trying to do is to get them back as close as possible to where they were.
Right.
And if they made $12.50, that should be very short term.
Okay. Jenny, do you have a moment? Would you join us? And David, please.
Above minimum wage, especially with the creeping increase in minimum wage. Just for clarification, I think that was just for us to understand a little bit more about how VOPE works for minimum wage people.
But I think what I'm now, if now what I want to know from Jenny is, I understand that that example may not apply, but are you saying that any of those anybody that's making minimum wage that is does not have the skills to go back into a minimum wage job is eligible already under the system? It's a fix we don't need to make?
If a worker can't make within 80%, then they're eligible, yeah. So it doesn't matter if your suitable wage is minimum wage, less than minimum wage, one minimum wage. If you don't have the knowledge, skills, and abilities to return to work at 80% of what you were making before, then you're eligible.
So that's different, because the minimum wage,
One thing about that is when you're saying less than minimum wage, and I think it's the question, that could be over the course of a week. I mean, how is that? Let me say, if you, currently your wage is less than minimum wage.
So you can have a suitable wage that's less than minimum wage for any number of reasons. For example, if you work for $20 an hour, but you only work 10 hours a week, then your suitable wage is going to be less than minimum wage.
Oh, it doesn't, I didn't know that. I thought it was still that they were finding 80% of a $20 an hour job. It's just you.
It's an average.
So it is.
Wage.
Oh. Okay, well, I don't know that I realized that that was the case, which actually makes good sense to me, but okay. So, but still, you can't.
Unfairly kind of target employers who hire people on a part-time basis, because anybody working part-time is potentially going to fall into this platform.
If you're working part-time, you're already automatically making sudden minimum wage.
Not necessarily.
If you're working a minimum wage, 20 hours a week, 40-hour work week, you're making sub minimum wage, is what we're saying.
Right.
Okay.
But even if you're making $20 an hour at part-time, then that looks like you're making sub minimum wage.
So tell me this, though, Jenny. If I'm making minimum wage, I'm working 40 hours a week, I'm making minimum wage, and I get injured, I can't find a job that's 80% of that. I have to find a job that's 100% of that. So I don't qualify automatically if I'm in that boat. So let's say that I had a physical minimum wage job and I can't do those same physical things any longer. And is it safe's position that, which is what I kind of started out with, is a minimum wage job is a minimum wage job is a minimum wage job. And so you don't need education, you don't need training any more than going in and getting that job. You generally get training on the job to do that function. And so you're just being hired because you're likely to show up, you've presented well. I mean, you're not, when you get hired for a minimum wage job, most of the time it's not based on your skill set. Is that what you're saying as well, is that you don't believe that it's necessary for training for a minimum wage worker to get training to go to another minimum wage job?
And if a worker was hurt making minimum wage and can go back to minimum wage, then essentially they're vocationally, financially whole.
But the person is working 40 hours a week at a minimum wage job.
Right.
Yeah.
But then they're injured, now they can only work 20 hours a week. Okay. Now we need to find a job that pays 24 hours a week part-time in order to, so that then they're going to get a vocate job that'll pay $24 an hour because they're going to work 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And that might take 60 months or 2 years.
Right. So if somebody works part-time office 3 days a week, at $20 an hour, and they've done this for 10 years. So you don't look at 80% of $20 an hour. You look at 80% of their average weekly wage, which is under, and they're automatically qualified.
They don't automatically
qualify.
Well, no.
Qualified.
Well,
proposal,
under
those
proposed, yeah.
Right.
Wow. Is there a way to fix that for the part-time issue?
So maybe the provision should reflect workers' suitable average wage, because it's short of the minimum wage.
that
or
would,
hourly.
Is
average.
Hourly wage.
Hourly wage.
I don't see a lot of, I mean, most, I get a few part-time workers, but my concern is more as the minimum wage goes up, you're going to have people that are in what they consider their career.
Yeah.
As a machinist, I mean, there are a lot of people that earn 16, 17, 18, and are hoping, of course, to advance, but they've gone to school for it. And I mentioned these are non-union workers that are roofers, welders.
But that's really valid concern. The question is, how can we structure this provision so that we're supporting those people, we're not inappropriately benefiting the part-time workers.
I agree.
If we just inserted a worker's suitable hourly wage is determined to be below the minimum hourly wage, does that address what SAFE's concern is regarding part-time workers? So we specify that we're talking about an hourly wage.
An average wage, yeah.
Well, not average.
Hourly wage.
Right. Does that address SAFE's concern about that piece, regardless of how you feel about the whole thing?
So if they're making $14 an hour, 20 hours a week, or 40 hours a week, they're trained for a job, and they can only work part-time 20 hours a week, trained for a job that pays $14, the same wages that were before they were injured.
Okay.
The same average wage.
So I think we probably want to talk about that some more, because that can have a very negative effect as well. So I do want to, I do think we probably need to explore that a little bit more and how the effects are. And I don't know if maybe that's something that the division or SAFE could give us some analysis of, just some examples of, this individual makes this much an hour, and if you changed it to hourly, this is how this would affect their voc things. This is what this person makes, and if we look at the weekly, average weekly, this is how this works. And you could look at it and give us some real examples of, let's talk about the folks. I think the concern, at least on our side when we talked, was I think there is a group of individuals that are close to minimum wage, but they're over minimum wage. And they are losing the opportunity to get back to where they're at because they're staying now. Now they're either at minimum wage or beneath. And so I'm not so certain that we were looking at the minimum wage folks, but those that are above it and still within that 80% of their wage would knock them at or below. And it really doesn't put them, they're probably the most disadvantaged, I think, by the system the way it currently is. And so we were trying to figure out how could we address those. So maybe would you guys be able to do something like that and tell us, like, I don't, this is a horrible thing to say, I'm sure, but I'll admit I do not know what the actual minimum wage is right now. And I know it is different in some locations, or it can be. But let's just, we could, if there's, we could use... We could use now, or here, and then in Portland, and then also within that, let's say that you look at another wage that's within less than 80%. Did I get it wrong, or is it more than 80%? Did I say it right or wrong? You know what I mean.
I think the verbiage might be okay as long as we talk about that hourly wage verbiage. But you're right, we have to explore.
I'd like to see the effects of that before we just make any decisions.
So the hourly wage is take an hourly wage, but it's the way the average weekly wage is determined is by looking at the 52 weeks.
Yeah.
Because in construction and a lot of things that are weather dependent, or if you have union contracts, that some days they might get paid at a different rate than they do on other days. There's not really a good way unless you take the average over 52 weeks. And that's what we do.
And that's
there's
true.
A
you've got
all
those. We saw that in average weekly wage calculations.
We spent a lot of time working out the language and the mechanics of average weekly wage in the regulatory process three times actually in the last couple years.
But I think it would be really helpful, at least for me and hopefully for you guys too, that if we could see some, here's what happens if you're making $25 an hour, and here's how this would work for you. Here's at $17 an hour, here's 15, here's 12, whatever it is. And whether or not their eligibility is affected by that. In other words, if they weren't within 80% of minimum wage, would they have gotten something that they're now losing? And I think those are the folks that we're really talking about. Those folks that if their wage had been at a different dollar value, they would qualify and they would get it. But simply because they're closer to the minimum wage, they're dropping off and not eligible. I think those are the folks that we really want to cover that are maybe losing in the way that this is currently written. So is that something that maybe you guys could provide us with? Okay. Does anybody else have any other data they might want to look at?
We're trying to focus on the people you're most concerned about, those $16 an hour people who are going to be impacted by that 20%. That's people we want to focus on.
Yeah,
and that's what you're most interested in too, right?
That had a career.
Yeah.
And benefits.
Yeah.
And a future in working their way up shouldn't have to try to work at a car wash.
Correct.
Right.
You know, it just doesn't seem fair.
Well, even right now, if somebody's making $13 an hour, which is above minimum wage for 40 hours a week, that's an average weekly wage of $520, and 80% of that is $416, so we'd say a suitable wage for you would be $10.40 per hour, so you're not eligible, you know, and that's not right.
Right. Yeah. That's really what we want to try to address, so I think we're getting really close, and I think it's just a matter of us understanding a little bit more and then seeing if we can find, you know, maybe one of the options is to redefine that instead of it being, if they fall in this category, we aren't looking at an 80%, maybe we're looking at a different percentage so that we cover more of those individuals instead of losing them. Just an option. I don't know that that's, you know,
right,
what ultimately
our concern.
We do. I think we understand it. Now we just have to get the data so that we can see it and then try to find the language that'll hit that. Does that sound like a good?
I just want to reiterate that, you know, you're dealing with people who do not do vocational assistance, and so we are not familiar, even if the management folks might know workers' comp, but don't know the ins and outs of what you guys are required to do or what you're required to do. So please be patient with us, but there's an obvious appetite from all aspects of this committee to figure out how to help these people. So I'm going to look to you guys and anyone else you want to work with to help these ladies figure out how to accomplish their goal in a way that does not upset the system in a way that the rest of the stakeholders can't handle.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you guys so much. I think we're close.
And about the time loss during training?
I don't think anyone's upset about that one.
Did anybody have any questions related to that? Before we go, Atusa, I'm sorry. I didn't forget you. I almost did. But did you have any questions for Jenny or Adele and Kathy?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you.
Kathy, I was able to jump on.
I'm surprised.
How would seasonal workers fit in this process? But there was like we have employees that work 9 months out of the year for us.
So
work for that.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. Perhaps that could be something that Jenny adds to. I'm sorry, Kathy, we didn't know you joined us.
Jenny actually addressed that. They're annualized. Mm-hmm.
But maybe she can give us an example so we can see that in your examples, if you would include somebody who is seasonal so that Kathy can see how that one would work as well. That'd be great.
Thank you.
Yeah, any other questions? Well, is there anything else on the agenda?
Just public testimony, and then I can give an update of what we'll talk about for the 5th.
Okay. Is there any general public testimony? I don't have anybody signed up, but did anybody else want to come forth? Luke? Sure.
Sure. You asked Lou Savage, administrator of the Workers' Compensation, you'd asked about seasonal workers.
Yes.
We have our expert here, Matt, too. We have something in the rule.
Yeah, so I'm Matt West. I'm the Employment Services Manager here at WCD. So there is a provision in the rules on how we calculate if they are seasonal workers. So that's already in the rules as far as when they're seasonal, it's calculated slightly different than if they're not.
How would this if you could speak to it, how would this concept that we're trying to discuss, would it be affected at all in terms of how you're calculating their wages in terms of their access to VOCA? I think that's really what Kathy's concern is how would this affect them if we're, depending on the different ways we're trying to talk about
the seasonal
fixing
workers?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that, I guess.
We could take a look at it and get back to you.
Okay. That'd be great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Did anybody else have any testimony? Okay, well, we'll talk about our next meeting.
Yes, so that will be on April 5th. So besides this bill, I'm presuming that we will add on updates on the two subcommittees with that. I think that, as far as any items, I think that is it in regards to bill review. So I think that's
okay.
It. That's all I have.
Great.
That's an afternoon meeting, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. And we're having the House Bill 3022 subcommittee that morning, yes.
And we get all the information out that week. Teresa does a great job of getting that out. So with that, I think we're adjourned.
Yeah.